first to try to find drug cartels and their networks in the United States. And then it became a much more expansive thing. The case in which they finally revealed it was a guy who's was charged with trying to export electrical equipment to Iran, so not a drug case at all. And the thing that really surprised me the most was that, you know, when the DOJ and the DEA first said they've been doing this, a lot of people speculated, well, here's another example of kind of war on terror tactics that are being applied to domestic law enforcement. And it's actually the other way around, that this started 9.5 years before September 11th in George H.W. Bush's administration. And this was the blueprint for a lot of what NSA started doing after September 11th.
Well, Brad Heath, we'll link to your report, investigative reporter at USA Today. That does it for our broadcast. Happy birthday to David Prude. And we have a social media job opening, full-time social media producer. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkner, Nate Feldsayer, Martin Nirmin Shake, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Ravi Karan, Dina Gezder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Portland. The time is 5 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
Dear listeners, your community radio station could use a new refrigerator. We are looking for a fridge that is no larger than 28 inches deep by 28 inches wide. If you have one, please contact Ani Haynes at 503-231-8032, extension 213, or by email at volunteer@kboo.org to make arrangements. Thanks for helping us keep our food cold while we work hard at producing the best community news, public affairs, and music for the Portland metro area, Cascadia, and the world here at KBOO Portland.
Now I hear people say I'm strong, but I didn't always.
Friday, April 10, 6 p.m. Join us on Bread and Roses for a roundtable of autistic women advocates. They will be talking about Autism Acceptance Month in April, why awareness without acceptance is not enough, and how they work to advance disability rights, centered on the access needs and opportunities for autistic people like themselves, despite harmful stereotypes and problematic media representations. Expect some strong opinions about vaccines, Abed from Community, and BBC's Sherlock. Join us Friday, April 10, 6 p.m.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a Portland homeless man is beaten to death.
A bill to expunge marijuana criminal records moves forward.
And the Portland City Council considers policies regarding private taxi service Uber.
And good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 10th, 2015. I'm Paul Rowland.
And I'm Liam Delta. A bill in the Oregon State Legislature this session aims to address the problem of a lack of enforcement of climate goals in the state. The bill requires the Environmental Quality Commission to adopt statewide greenhouse gas emission limits for years 2020 and 2050. The measures taken statewide will be reviewed every 5 years until 2050. For more, KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with Kristen Eberhardt of the Sightline Institute.
In your latest article about HB 3470 currently being considered in the Oregon legislature, you compare the enforcement of Oregon's climate law to a child who knows the rules but won't follow them. Can you talk a little bit about some of that history of the lack of enforcement?
Sure. So Oregon passed some great climate goals in 2007, saying that we would meet our scientifically necessary pollution reduction goals, but those have just remained aspirational in the years in between. And rather than having an actual enforcement mechanism, the laws have just stayed on the books as something that we would like to do but don't have a mechanism for actually accomplishing.
So what would this new bill, HB 3470, do?
So HB 3470 would commit Oregon to actually meeting those goals. And it would ask the Environmental Quality Commission to come up with a plan for what it would take to actually get to those goals by 2050, and then to implement that plan.
And how would the enforcement be carried out?
So that would really depend on what comes up in the plan. They would be tasked with looking at all regulatory options, but likely the thing that really gets you to, you know, ensure that you're meeting your pollution limits is a hard cap on pollution, where the major polluters in the state, there's only about 70 that would likely be regulated by a hard cap, would have to buy permits equal to the number of tons of pollution that they emit.
And would there be a type of cap and trade scenario, or would these just be a hard cap?
So you could do it either way. You can implement a hard cap where all of the permits are available from the state and the big polluters have to come to the state and buy their permits. Or you can also allow them to trade those permits amongst themselves.
And what are the biggest polluters, the biggest creators of climate change here in the state of Oregon?
So actually, one of the biggest sources of pollution here in the state of Oregon is coal plants that we buy our power from them, even though they're not inside the state. So we're responsible for the pollution because it's being used to power our homes and businesses, but the plants themselves are not in Oregon.
And does this plan address that issue?
And it would, yes. So all of the electricity that is being used inside the state, we would follow that to the source. And if that is a big fossil fuel plant, they would have to buy permits from the state of Oregon.
I understand there's also an equity component in this bill. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Low-income people and communities of color are the hardest hit by climate change. And so this bill tries to make sure that it's helping those people to be able to thrive even as we're cutting our pollution. So it would appoint an Environmental Justice Advisory Committee to help in the development of this action plan to make sure that the regulations being considered are fair and equitable to low-income and communities of color. It would direct public and private investment towards those disadvantaged communities to make sure that we're giving them opportunities for small businesses and schools to thrive. And it would just overall have a requirement that any programs cutting pollution don't disproportionately impact low-income communities.
And what's the status of the bill right now? What's its chance of passage?
So the bill is getting heard in the House Committee on Energy and Environment on Tuesday, along with two other climate policy bills. And we'll see what happens from there.
Well, we will get that hearing on the air. We'll continue to follow this. Again, we're talking about HB 3470, which is being considered in the Oregon House, which would require a plan to actually implement the state's carbon reduction goals. I have been speaking with Kristen Eberhardt. She is with the Sightline Institute and has just published a story on their website, which is sightline.org, called Oregon Has a Climate Law Implementation Problem, and HB 3470 has the answer. Kristen, thank you for joining us on KBOO today.
Thank you.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Oregon state legislators agreed today to schedule a hearing by the House Judiciary Committee on Bill 3372. The bill would allow people convicted of nonviolent marijuana crimes to expunge those convictions from their records, as well as reduce sentences for those serving jail time. The campaign to bring Oregon criminal records in line with the state's new legalization of marijuana is mainly being pushed by Fresh Start Oregon. This group is in turn supported by the BUS Project, a voter advocacy and awareness organization. KBOO's Ethan Martin spoke earlier about the campaign with Aaron Brown from the BUS Project.
My name is Aaron Brown, and I'm the outreach coordinator for the BUS Project. We're an organization that's all about getting young people involved and engaged in local and statewide politics and developing the next generation of leaders for the state of Oregon's future.
Great. It seems like an awesome program. I gather that you guys are supporting the Fresh Start Oregon campaign. Could you talk briefly about that campaign?
Sure. So House Bill 3372 was introduced by Representative Lou Frederick in North Portland. The bill would expunge all nonviolent marijuana records. There are currently believed to be somewhere around 200 Oregonians that are currently incarcerated due to a marijuana-related charge that was nonviolent. And in addition, over the last, between 2000 and 2010, I believe it was 115,000 citations for marijuana possession and distribution were issued to Oregonians. Obviously, these citations were, or unsurprisingly rather, these citations were disproportionately given out to low-income folks, young folks, and Oregon's communities of color. And so now, with the overwhelming urgent mandate that the successful passage of Measure 91 with the new Approach Oregon campaign saying that Oregon should legalize marijuana, I think we've established that Oregonians are ready for a new direction in drug law and drug reform. And so I think that this bill is sort of the next step in really continuing our push towards having sensible drug laws that don't hold back Oregon's families.
Could you talk about the ways in which having a marijuana conviction on your record can negatively impact your life and your prospects?
Sure. I mean, we're seeing stories all over from young Oregonians that are really having to deal with this problem, right? So let's say after you've gotten this one charge, you're ready to apply to college, and you realize that Pell Grants or your FAFSA forms that you won't be eligible for funding, right? If you want to apply for a loan on a house or want to find ways, you know, a landlord wants to discriminate against you. I mean, I think that there's plenty of opportunities for if you're applying for a job that a potential employer might see that criminal record and decide that that's bound. But, I mean, while the Ban the Box campaign and other folks have done some really great work to sort of strike down some of these stipulations, it's clear that just having this charge on your record can be devastating for your, you know, for your economic future and for the people that are close to you, to your family. Marijuana shouldn't be ruining lives, is sort of the direction that we're coming at this from. And so the BUS Project is really eager to be throwing weight behind, you know, turning a new leaf and moving towards a more sensible drug policy that doesn't hurt the opportunity for Oregonians in the future.
So House Bill 3372 was introduced into the legislature by Representative Lou Frederick. Was the Fresh Start Oregon campaign behind that initial move to get this legislation introduced at all, or is Frederick operating from a motivation outside of your campaign?
So Representative Frederick dropped this bill about a month and a half ago, and the BUS Project, which had been very hard working on the new motor voter bill, which automatically registered 350,000 Oregonians to vote, was looking for a new campaign to really throw its weight behind. And we were definitely looking for something that specifically impacted many young Oregonians that often aren't reached by other sort of organizational drives. So we were really excited about this campaign, and for the response has been overwhelming. And the Fresh Start Oregon campaign is just something that the BUS Project, the name BUS Project, put towards this initiative.
What about the Senate Bill 364 that has already been passed? Was that supported by the Fresh Start campaign as well, or was that introduced independently?
You know, it was introduced independently. I mean, we're in support of it as well. It is kind of a sister bill that in our campaign together got legs and went through and was passed before we even had a chance to really step up and work on it.
Are you aware of other legislation either pending or passed in other states around the U.S. that is similar, trying to achieve a similar result?
I know that there is a renewed fervor nationwide towards just sort of the decriminalization and legalization of marijuana. I think in 2016 you're going to see a lot more legislation coming through, like through bills and through, you know, votes at the 2016 election. But the fact is that Oregon's only, you know, is one of only four states that have passed marijuana legalization bills, right? Washington, Colorado, and Alaska, and D.C. as well. But D.C. is kind of caught up with its own political mess. But none of the other states, I mean, while there's definitely been some smaller level movements to decriminalize or kind of remove certain smaller issues, this would be the first widespread one. And this is actually Oregon really potentially leading the nation again, not only on just passing legalization of marijuana, but also in profoundly thinking about how we can rectify some of the very racist outcomes of the war on drugs.
So you're in Salem right now. Could you tell us about what's going on and that's what's going to be happening later this evening around 5 o'clock?
We are still waiting to see if this bill will be heard by the House Committee on Judiciary. If it is not, there's still other opportunities for similar legislation to be plugged in. It's currently an ongoing work in progress, and regardless of whether or not House Bill 3372 gets scheduled for a hearing, the bus project will be continuing to work on ways in which we can pass legislation that eliminates the impact that a lot of these vestigial marijuana laws are having on our communities.
That was Aaron Brown, the outreach coordinator for the bus project. If you'd like to get involved with the bus project or with Fresh Start Oregon, go to www.busproject.org/freshstartoregon. At the Fresh Start Oregon page, you can share stories. If you have a marijuana conviction on your record, you can share information about that. You can become involved in the movement to try and expunge those records from Oregonians' past records and generally join the community of people who want to move forward with this. And this is Ethan Martin with KBOO News.
A new report by the Oregon Center for Public Policy has found that raising Oregon's minimum wage to $15 an hour would increase the economic security and self-sufficiency of a large number of Oregon families. The report studied the so-called benefits cliff argument, one of the arguments made by people opposed to the $15 an hour minimum wage. According to that argument, the loss of public benefits by some workers would undermine wage gains by the higher minimum wage. But research carried out by the Center for Public Policy says this so-called benefits cliff is overblown. It would not pose a big problem for the state. The center found that raising Oregon's minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2018 would benefit more than a half million Oregon workers and hundreds of thousands of children. Preliminary estimates show that close to 600,000 workers would benefit directly from the increase. That's the number of workers whose wages would go up as a result of the legislature lifting the wage floor. Another 100,000 workers would likely see their wages increase indirectly as employers adjust overall pay ladders. A $15 an hour minimum wage would also improve the economic circumstances of many Oregon children, according to the report. Around 350,000 children have at least one parent who would see their income rise, directly or indirectly, as a result of increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour. The report found that tax credits targeting low-income families, the Earned Income Tax Credit, the Child Tax Credit, and the Oregon Working Families Child Care Tax Credit phase out as income increases. Their research found that contrary to the benefits cliff argument, workers who benefit from these tax credit programs find themselves better off as they earn more income.
The head of the newly formed Citizen Review Board, meant to oversee the Portland police, unexpectedly resigned this week. And other members are criticizing the way the city has dealt with the board. In a Wednesday email to the Community Oversight Advisory Board, Paul DeMunez cited health issues as the reason he was withdrawing as chair of the committee that was formed to oversee police reforms as mandated in a settlement between the city and the Federal Police Justice Department. At the board's meeting on Thursday, former State Senator Abel Gordley criticized the lack of preparation and planning done by the city for the board. Gordley called it a huge oversight by the city not to have previously prepped board members on the details of the settlement that led to the creation of the oversight board.
Last night, the Portland City Council decided that automobile passenger service, Uber, and others like it, must wait until policies regarding insurance and surge pricing can be fleshed out. Also discussed at the hearing were the question of whether transportation network companies would have to hold city licenses to operate here, and whether drivers for Uber-type services would need business licenses. The hearing began with a report by a task force convened by the city to study available information about the way these services are regulated in other cities and to make recommendations to the city council. Here's a clip from last night's public testimony.
Hi, my name is John Orr. I'm proud to drive for Radio Cab, and I'm really concerned about the safety issues that have been just the tragedies that have happened all over because of Uber's powerful lobbying to be exempt from them. So, for example, we've got a couple phones here. Hypothetically, this could be my friend's phone or my friend's car, and I could drive under my friend's profile. And no one would know. You've got a picture on someone's smartphone the size of a fingernail. As long as I look remotely like them from a block away, no one's going to know that's not their driver. Okay. I've got a 2x2 photo here on my permit that's displayed in my cab at all times. So anybody can ask to see that at any time during a cab ride. And these TNCs act like safety is built into their app. They just have good PR people. It's not safe. It could be anybody giving you a ride. You can create an account and have your friend drive under it and then completely bypass even Uber's weak background check process that they lobby to make weaker and different than the current cab industry background process. To use their system, you have to use your phone while you're on the road. And I don't think realistically they're going to pull over and find a parking spot to accept a ride. They're going to be on the road driving in traffic, and they're going to look down at their small screen, and they're going to hit accept, and oh, the phone's not working, I'm going to keep hitting it. And they're going to kill people. They're going to cause accidents. There's going to be tragedies like there have been in other cities as a result of different, weaker, special standards being supplied because they come in here and, you know, have slick lobbyists and try and get special treatment. I hope the city doesn't buy it.
Good evening, City Council. My name is Erica Jones. I'm a driver for Radio Cab Company in Portland. The reason the cab industry is regulated in Portland by the city is to make sure that every cab is safe and their drivers are vetted. We play by rules that are set by the city, and it ensures that the companies follow rules on insurance and safety and making sure all their drivers are permitted.
New rules on Uber drivers were set to go into effect next week, but last night the council decided to postpone the decision till next month. Private for-profit transportation companies must now wait until the ground rules are set for a four-month pilot project that will test the limits of passenger-supported transportation methods in Portland.
And you are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Bread and Roses, with today's program discussing Autism Acceptance Month. At 7 is Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a high of 55, whereas Sunday will be mostly cloudy with a high of 60 degrees. Today in history, the largest volcano eruption in recorded history took place in 1815, when Mount Tambora erupted in the Indonesian archipelago, beginning a three-month-long eruption cycle that ultimately led to a period of crop failure and starvation around the world known as the Year Without a Summer. Also on this day in 1912, the RMS Titanic set sail from Southampton, England, on her maiden and only voyage. The quote of the day is, "Perhaps all the dragons in our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us act just once with beauty and courage. Perhaps everything that frightens us is, in its deepest essence, something helpless that wants our love." Rainer Maria Rilke.
Portland police have identified a 60-year-old homeless man found dead Wednesday evening under the Morrison Bridge as Michael Harvey. His death was ruled a homicide after police determined that he had been bludgeoned to death by another person. Police officials said they believe Harvey may have been involved in a violent altercation with another homeless person. Officials offered little details as to the identity of the suspect, other than that he is probably of average height, weight, and a white male between the ages of 30 and 40. Harvey's granddaughter, Elise Dubitsky, said she hadn't talked to her grandfather in 2 years. She recalled that last she knew, Harvey had been a rental manager at an apartment complex in Reno, Nevada. She also questioned the police's claim that Harvey was homeless, instead suggesting that he loved the outdoors and perhaps had traveled to Oregon to go camping. The police and Crime Stoppers of Oregon are offering a $1,000 reward for any information leading to the arrest of the person involved in Harvey's homicide. The number for Crime Stoppers is 503-823-4357.
The City Council of Vancouver, Washington this week approved a plan to redevelop the city's waterfront. But the main developer behind the $1.5 billion project is hesitant to carry out the development if a major oil terminal is approved to go in next door. The oil terminal has faced stiff opposition from local residents, but may still be approved despite the lack of support. If the oil terminal is approved, the developer of Vancouver's waterfront restoration project may cancel his plans. Currently, the waterfront development project includes a 7-acre park and up to 32 acres of commercial development and residential units. The city hopes the park will be open to the public by 2017. Meanwhile, the oil terminal, which is the largest proposed terminal on the West Coast, is awaiting approval from Governor Inslee because the quantity of oil proposed is so large. In summer 2013, the port approved a lease agreement with Tesoro Savage to ship up to 360,000 barrels of crude oil each day along the Columbia River. Tesoro Savage now must get approval from the Energy Facility Site Evaluation Council, which will make a recommendation to the governor on the unprecedented project. Governor Inslee will then make the final decision to deny or approve the terminal. If he approves it, the developers of the proposed waterfront redevelopment project have said they will likely pull out.
The U.S. Justice Department has successfully intervened on behalf of a female transgendered prisoner in Georgia. Ashley Diamond will be able to resume taking hormones. State authorities said that from now on, constitutionally appropriate medical and mental health care will be made available for trans prisoners. The announcement came during a hearing of a lawsuit Diamond brought against the state of Georgia with the help of the Southern Poverty Law Center. At the moment, Diamond says that her main concern is her physical safety, which takes precedence over hormone treatment. She's been sexually assaulted and constantly harassed for the last 3 years at the men's prison where she's being held. Here's a clip of Ashley Diamond speaking from prison.
Not only has my body made radical changes, but the effects of not having the hormones have caused the dysphoria of my condition to deteriorate. My body shape has changed. The way my skin looks and feels. Morally and ethically, everything that has happened to me is wrong.
Since arriving in prison, Ashley has been denied all these really important forms of care, and it's led her to be very suicidal and really remains in jeopardy of serious injury, if not death, if she continues to go without care. At this point, there's not even a dispute that she needs this care. Her own doctors within the prison are recommending that she be given it. It's just a real policy of intransigence at the high level.
Diamond has asked to be moved to a lower security facility, but she's living in constant fear as she awaits her court date for that request.
A United Nations rapporteur, Rita Idzak, has called for an end of discrimination against the Roma people, or gypsies. The announcement came on International Roma Day, April 8th. A year ago, a leaked note from the Parisian police chief gave orders for the police of Paris to expel Roma from the city. Amnesty International estimated last year that 12 million Roma live in fear of being forcibly evicted. The 20,000 Roma who live in France are nearly all living in abject poverty.
The anti-whaling group Sea Shepherd has rescued the crew of a fishing vessel off the coast of West Africa. The Sea Shepherd ship had been stalking the vessel for weeks to try to accompany it to a port to face charges for illegal fishing. The two ships played a game of cat and mouse, with the fishing vessel attempting to dodge between pack ice or using huge waves to create a barrier between it and the Sea Shepherd ship. According to activists with Sea Shepherd, the captain of the illegal fishing ship was cheering as his ship sank, along with tons of evidence of illegal activity. They accused the fishing ship of deliberately sinking their own vessel to avoid prosecution. When the ship began to sink, they sent out a distress signal and Sea Shepherd's ship came to the rescue. In 2013, Interpol issued a wanted notice for the Thunder, which has operated under at least three different names and several different flags, including Mongolia and most recently Nigeria. Interpol estimates that the owners of the Thunder, probably an organized criminal gang, have earned more than $60 million from illegal fishing since 2006. Sea Shepherd will be pressing Sao Tome and Nigerian officials, who are leading the search and rescue operation, to work with Interpol to prosecute the Thunder's captain.
And you've been listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Kristen Yount. The producer is Ethan Martin. Our engineer is Ian Gadbury. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen or something else to write with. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. Senator Jeff Merkley can be reached at 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's number is 503-378-3111.